First Samuel 13, we'll kind of review just a little bit here. This is, I guess what I'm doing first is going through the Old Testament in a manner that I've never done before, and that's thinking, you know, of the Paul status as such, looking back and seeing what's actually in there for us, not trying to just read it as history, but what can a person get from what you're reading? And that's been kind of a challenging thing sometimes. But we'll get through it. For example, just some review here a little bit, the thunderstorm thing. I think that thunderstorm thing is absolutely spectacular, but I don't really see much good coming out of a thunderstorm. A bunch of rain, a bunch of noise, and all that kind of stuff. So I don't really see a whole lot that comes out of a thunderstorm. Now, a good rain is nice, and but a very damaging thunderstorm is not always the greatest thing. And what do you do when you get a big thunderstorm? You just ride it out. You just ride it through, and you're done. You're done. What do kids do when we get into a thunderstorm? They just ride it out. When it's over, and life goes on as it always has. So that simple observation that we just ride through this thunderstorm just like our kids do. The other thing is Saul didn't even pay attention to his own warning, which we learn from when we read about Saul. Now, chapter 13, verse 12, for example, I just see a simple little thing here when Saul tried to do his own offerings. We can't not do our own offering. We can't pay for anything. It has to be the Lord paying. Matter of fact, remember in the Exodus 12, it says that he gave himself. So offerings, we can't do it ourselves. And I like chapter 13, verse 19. This was what I got way back when we first read about King James only Bibles with no reference notes, nothing but text, and printed from a local church as compared to a worldly publisher. And they talk here about there's no Smith found in the land of Israel. And you know the standard joke there and everything. So, But they didn't have their own swords. They had to go to the enemy to do the sword thing. And when that guy preached that, I go, oh, man, that makes total sense. Why should I give my money to Nelson or something as compared to this church who's printing Bibles? So never have bought one from a worldly publisher since then. And that's kind of a strange thing. And yet we realize today America is having some of our enemy build some of our crafts and ammunition and stuff. It's an amazing thing. So there's that thing. In fact, on TV this morning, on the news program this morning, on the morning sunrise service or whatever that's called. Oh, by the way, speaking of, aren't you glad we don't do the sunrise service thing? That would have been one nippy little morning out there about 5 o'clock. Yeah, I guess we could have it over at the Burt's as Jerry goes off to work. Sunrise departure, but all that kind of stuff. It's amazing to me that it's getting away, whatever. Anyway, in the news this morning, they had a guy. The guy did a big. They said they had 6 million viewers this morning. There were 6 million people that heard about all the different Bibles and how to pick them and how to just the joy of having. It's much easier to pick a Bible, they said today. And the national news, all the different Bibles. Nelson Publishers was on there. That stuff just irks me. But oh well. They don't seem to look at it that way. There's such a choice now that you can find exactly the one you want. Yeah, but see, you can find the one that... See, you've got yourself already paid. Now you want to find a Bible that fits you. Somewhere out there, there's one that fits you. As compared to, there's one Bible... And you got to make yourself adjust to fit that one book. They won't go that route. So, and besides Nelson, the money thing anyway. Well, then we look at chapter. We'll go back. You should have gone back to 12, I guess, verse 13. But it just talks about get the kind of king you want in your life. We all kind of tend to look for the one that will please us the most, and that's the if you nears thing today. Everybody's the same thing with your Bible. Pick a Bible that fits you. Find a church that fits you. And there's plenty of choices. Oh, man, there's plenty of choices out there. Then we notice a couple times, just some good examples here, where the Spirit came and went with Saul. So there's our example that the Spirit comes and goes in the Old Testament. And we're sealed. Aren't you glad you're sealed? Because he would have bye-bye a long time ago. It's not my judgment call, but it's a natural statement. And then Revelation. Then Samuel 15. 23 talks about rebellion and witchcraft kind of go hand in hand. Same thing with stubbornness, iniquity, and adultery. And we certainly don't want to think that we're full of iniquity and idolatry, and we certainly aren't into witchcraft. But if there's rebellion going on and there's stubbornness, that's still pretty wicked stuff. Which does tell me, a background thought is, young people's rebellion is not necessary. It's not something we should just, well, it will happen. You know, you're going to have some hard times in life and thinking about that, but you, the rebellion thing is not a normal thing. Something's causing the young generation, as we went through it, to rebel. And it's not the Lord. It's not of God. So if maybe somebody would have told me that years ago, nah, I guess I probably would have still fought the things. What causes young people to rebel? What causes us to rebel? What's going on? It's not of God. Now, in its wrong manner, that is. You know what I keep seeing the most as I go through this thing? I still keep seeing more and more example of Old Testament teachings that have filtered into the church today. I see that. I just keep seeing it more and more and more. You're going to get tired of me saying that. That is the one thing I get out of the four of the Old Testament, and as I see things that people are still preaching and teaching and trying to live up to and use it in the back of their mind, it's just still there. And it's not just that it's there historically, it's there because this is how God is, and this is what you need to do, and this is the way God will deal with it if you don't. That still shows up absolutely everywhere. And I don't know if you see that or not, maybe you're talking with people, but it's, we're not even talking Gospels or Hebrews to view, we're talking just Old Testament. It's just wild, some of the stuff that I'm recognizing now that I see being taught today. Another thought is knowing, because we're going to learn more about how Saul really blew it. Didn't Saul blow it or what? I mean, the guy just, I don't know. Yeah, all sorts of things. He just blew it. And my thought here is that I just recognize a lot of parental Sauls, especially us dads. We can learn from this guy. Like, why don't we learn from this guy? Well, we learn that we don't learn from the history, that sort of a thing. And pastors as well. Here Saul puts the big thunderstorm on his people, and then he does his own thing anyway, and et cetera, et cetera. So let's get into the new stuff. Let's go to chapter 14. Now, Sam did 15 last week, and it's online. I don't know if I haven't gotten any letters in from the Nelson Publishing House yet, but it still could happen. It still can happen. I have a little pamphlet of Jonathan Edwards in the Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. It's been a book that's been published for years. Someday it'll be published out there. Saul and the Amalekites by Sam. Sam. You go by Sam. That's the way it'll be. Here we go. Chapter 14, verse 24. I'm kind of stymied on how to present what we're going to look at. We're kind of highlighting the Old Testament. But boy, you go about five or six verses, there's another story. There's another lesson. Another five or six verses, there's another one. Then there's 20 verses or something. So I'll try to touch them if we can. And it's so nice that you all have your Bibles, and I trust that you've read these things at least once, if not more so. Chapter 14, verse 24 is a place I'd like to look at just a little bit here. Here's where Saul's doing a pretty horrible job of leadership here. He tells his people they can't eat. Now, this guy was not a Baptist, as they say, the Baptist stories. But he just tells his guys not to eat. And I like it in verse 24, it says, and the men of Israel were distressed. So in a leadership basis, from a pattern, I'm sure I've stressed people distressed, caused people to be distressed. We've done that as parents, caused our children to be distressed. Maybe they brought it upon themselves, but if it's dealt with in a proper manner, I would like to think that we can even deal with kids that doesn't still distress them. They just realize the situation, deal with how you have to deal with it, and then life goes on. But anyway, sermon all on its own. And it didn't work at all. Look at verse 37 for some reason. In 37 it says here, and Saul asked counsel of God. Yeah, like he's going to do what God has him to do anyway. But look at how God handled it. He didn't answer him. So right away we get people saying today, well, see, God's not answering your prayer. What have you done wrong that God's not going to answer your prayer? And here comes the whole guilt trip and you probably aren't giving enough. You haven't brought anybody to church or witnessing to people. Can't have enough tracts. I haven't got any tracts, Pastor. Doesn't matter, LD. Just get them out there. Just stuff like that. And then verse 33. We got Jonathan here. He took a chunk out of that stuff, and he didn't know anything about it. But he sure put on his people. Verse 34, 33, then they told Saul, saying, behold, the people sin against the Lord, and that they eat with the blood. And he said, ye have transgressed. Roll a great stone unto me this day. And Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people, and say unto them, bring me hither every man his ox, every man his sheep, and slay them here, and eat, and sin not against the Lord. He really put it to them. And the whole thing was the fact that Saul was so out of God's will during this whole thing that Jonathan, who said in verse 27, heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. So he didn't know that they weren't supposed to do this. But yet I can see somebody going to this little section to justify their rebellion. Can you see that in here? Because here's Jonathan. He didn't know he wasn't supposed to. That doesn't matter. He did something that Saul told everybody not to do. And it turned out real good that Jonathan got this thing all figured out and the people got all da-da-da-da. And the whole story turned out good, except it wasn't what Saul said. So somebody go, well, see right there. Rebellion's okay. So all we need is a kid or a young person or somebody in the church thinking that they know the right way. And to get in there and cause a ruckus. And the whole church turns around and gets all messed up or does really well or whatever. It's not the way it should be done. So Saul is not a good example to follow for rebellion. And then the other example that we look at for Saul, that look at chapter 16, that we see people turn to. And they turn to Saul for music. What's the name? No. And so we can see people turning to Saul for a bad example, or a good bad example of rebellion. And then 16, we see the people can turn to Saul and David for the power of music. Well, we won't talk much about that this morning. We've been over that thing a million times. That here's Saul. He's in a messed up situation. Well, Spirit of God is not on him, so that's a big deal. David comes along with his music and comforts him, and he says there in verse 23, refreshed, was well, and evil spirit departed. So in this case, music was there for Saul physically, mentally, and spiritually. Well, see, let's turn to music for that sort of a thing. And that can be because we have the Spirit of God. So we're supposed to get all that from the Spirit of God. And Saul did not have the Spirit of God, so the power of music was able to get in there and do what it can do. Does that make sense to you? And we've talked about that. So what does the world out there who does not have the Spirit of God do? What have they been all turning to today? All the churches and the whole world is just absolutely turning to music. You can't go anywhere without music, good or bad. What does it say in Daniel? All kinds of music. Means good music, bad music, whatever. All kinds of music. The world is following, and they're being duped with it, and they've got the power of music in their lives, which is what happened to Saul, but that's because Saul did not have the Spirit of God. So Christians cannot go to Saul and David for their justification of music in their lives. And in fact, let's just jump the ship, because I'm probably not going to get all this done here. Let's go also, speaking of music, let's go to... Oh, let's see. Where did I have that? There's another little example here. I sure thought I know there is. Chapter 18. Here's another example that could totally be used against the scriptures today and what's going on in churches. They could sure turn to this thing. Chapter 18, verse 10. I tell you, Saul and his javelin were quite a pair, weren't they? Whoever this guy was, he has a javelin through with somebody. Sam, that little knife thing? Yeah, that's just a modern javelin. I should carry that with me. Verse 10. I think it's verse 10, right? Verse 10. And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul. And he prophesied in the midst of the house. Preached, prophesied, told of the future, preached. Just, he talked, he yacked. He told people what needed to be going on. And David played with his hand, which we know now doesn't mean he sits there and twiddled his thumbs, you know, or playing his fingernails or whatever. He was in the heart thing there, okay? And there was a javelin in Saul's hand. Just this guy. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. And Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over a thousand. He went out and in before the people, and David behaved himself wisely in all ways, and the Lord was with him. Now, do you see what's going on here? Here's a guy that's going to get up and do a little preaching or something or other, and you've got the musician over here playing in a manner that's pleasing God. And in this particular case, the musician wins. The music wins out here over the prophesying. And what's going on in churches today? There's more music than there is preaching. And people go to churches because of the music, not because of the preaching. So we could go here to Saul and say, well, look at that right there. See? God blessed the music situation here more than he did the preaching thing. I suppose a guy could say, well, the preaching is so wrong today in these churches, like Saul's would be, right? You know Saul's not going to tell him what you need to tell him. And the good guy, the musician, comes along, and that's the one that God hears, the blesses. But you know for your fact what's going on in the churches today. The music is not still pleasing to God. But you see my point with this whole thing about preaching and music? If you throw out Paul, you can go to Samuel, you can find a reason to have music be the spiritual leader, spiritual power in your life. Two examples. In the one example, you can use music that's more important than the preaching. And that's wrong. That's Old Testament. That is totally wrong. Okay. Interesting little stories there. Well, let's go back here to chapter 16. Chapter 16 here. What do we got in 16 other than the music scene there? I don't find anybody tremendously interested in that whole story of David and his harp and Saul, but it sure does have some marvelous awareness there for the power of music. But again, remember, Saul did not have the Spirit of God on him. Now, look at verse 11. Let's go to verse 1. We just got done with Sam's lesson on Saul and the Amalekites, and what does he say to Samuel in verse 1? And the Lord said unto Samuel, how long wilt thou mourn? Come on, get up, get going here. The thing is over with. Let's get on with life here. So a lot of things we have to stop whining about. Let's get on with life. And it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. I know that, but let's look for that example here. Look at verse 6. Going to find a king. And he said, peaceably I'm come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Sanctify yourselves. Well, verse 6. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. I mean, this guy had all the lookings of a preacher. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his suit or the car he drove up in or his suaviness on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For the man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Just an example of that there. And we'll get into the anointed thing later. They make a big thing about the anointed today. Going back to this time. We'll get to that later. Another lesson here. Look at verse 13. Part of this whole situation there is it says, Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. But Saul didn't stand a chance. Just had the Spirit of God, and Saul just didn't stand a chance. But I want to look at verse 14. The Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. Aren't you glad we're sealed? Chapter 17 is the good stuff about Goliath. I should have brought my other Bible. Go to 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 19. 2 Samuel 21, verse 19. This is a verse that just was my first major disappointment in my witnessing life. Major one. Because this was when I went over there to that, what was that school, North Sunrise? What was that school out there? Jubilee. And I got a chance to preach at Jubilee. Took my accordion and the whole thing. Here's all these people killers, rebellious kids, and took my accordion and got those kids to sing and do my little lesson and dropped the bomb that, you know, these new Bibles say that David wasn't the one that killed Goliath. And the kids were like, wow, I didn't know that. We all know that David killed Goliath. And so we showed them all that kind of stuff. And look at verse, look at chapter 21 here, verse 19. You see the italics of the brother of? And then NIV takes that out. And it basically says, yeah, killed Goliath. And the professor or the teacher or the guy, whoever they call those guys down there, he was irate. I mean, he was so angry. He came up to the house. We were visiting. I don't know who went with me. Somebody went with me here. And I remember the couple we had here that, I can't think of the name. They remember those couple. We went up there and stayed with them. And this guy comes screeching into the driveway and just went bonkers over this whole thing. And I could not find this verse for anything. And I know I even had it marked. And he says, show me where that Bible says that David wasn't the one that killed Goliath. And I could not. And I drove home that day. I was looking for a tree to drive into. There are no trees out there, so that's probably good. Honeycutt was his name. Honeycutt. Well, I don't suppose he would have. He'd have had a reason. But I don't care. We don't have to convince him. We've got to show him. I couldn't show him that day. Very bugged me. Okay, let's keep going here. Got some more looking. Let's go here to chapter 18. Back to 18. So second Samuel 21:19 in an NIV Bible, probably any other Bible too, tells you that it wasn't David that killed Goliath. And you can ask anybody, who killed Goliath? Any modern Christian knows it was David. I mean, everybody knows that story. And show the NIV that well, your Bible says that it was not David. Something like that, yeah. Okay, verse 18, chapter 18, verse 5. Just a couple of phrases here where it says David behaved himself wisely. And people liked David. They went with David. Look at verse 5, 18, verse 5. And David went out whithersoever Saul sent him and behaved himself wisely. That's good. Good job, David. Look at 18, verse 14. And David behaved himself wisely in all his ways. And it wasn't just that he was wise, but he behaved wisely. And parents, you could use that. Olivia, you're just not behaving wisely this morning. See, that's just a scriptural way of saying that. See? Or you could walk up to Austin and say, Austin, you know, Mom and Dad are about to come home and you haven't been behaving wisely tonight. Should I tell him what you did? See? And then Austin can say, that wouldn't be behaving very wisely. But that's what he looked at verse 15. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. Afraid of a guy doing right. Isn't that amazing? But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. He was with them. Okay, look at verse 30. Then the princes, plural, of the Philistines went forth. And it came to pass, after they went forth, that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by. I like that. Look at verse 9. Now, I like how this is put. And Saul eyed David from that day and forward. He eyed him. He just, everywhere he went, David, I'm going to get you. Everything David did, he just rubbed it in to Saul. You know, just irritated the poor guy. Look at verse 11. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall. There's that phrase, to the wall, against the wall. And David avoided out of his presence twice. Now, we recognize, I know you, how many, you've all read this, all the times that David knew Saul was trying to kill him. And he knew this. And yet, David is a good example. Look at verse 12. And Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him. You think maybe that's why sometimes people don't click with you? I'm not saying that you're flaunting yourself as a David, but yet you do have the Spirit of God in you, and you're going to cause a problem with the Spirit that's in them. Just your presence, because you've got the Spirit of God there. Not your outward, just your presence. Then you add the outward. You know, ladies, you look like ladies, and you actually covered up, and you're not some macho end for the Green Bay Packers or whatever, and you're not out there driving these humongous trucks and da-da-da-da. And that testimony, that with the Spirit of God in there and the whole deal, that you're just like you're talking to some Sauls, and they're eyeing you. Remember the lady at Pizza Hut? Just remember that. They eyed you. You ever felt like you've been looked at when you walk into a room? You know? And you got your Bible too. You just know that. Now you don't need the young people like to go in there and be stirring with their Bible, you know, slap their Bible down and stuff. Been there, done that, but no need to. But that's how Saul looked upon David. All the things that David he's already started wrong with Saul. I mean, they're just not clicking. And David is clicking with the people. David is clicking with God. And Saul, who thinks he's doing the right, way back to the day of his thunderstorm, thinks he's got it under control. And they just don't click. I don't know. I find it very amazing that God would even give anybody evil spirit. I don't understand that. One of the nice things about trusting your King James Bible for as it says, that all you got to do is believe what it says. And you don't have to always try to figure it out. I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to cover my tracks. I don't understand. Same thing as the music. Why did God put an evil spirit on this guy? What's the point here? Why would he do that? Why didn't he put the good spirit on him and straighten that guy out? That's what he did to us. The whole thing, yeah. There's the purpose there. And they all had their choices. Nobody was made to be that way. They all chose that way. It's just like in the tribulation. He doesn't send that delusion to keep them from getting saved. They have already rejected his word. And then he sends that stuff down. And, you know, you and me, we would, we'd like to think that we would send them the Spirit of God and make their lives better. Like, I would like to do that for some people. I think I need to send some blessings these people's ways because they're having some difficult times. Bless, 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 bless. Kind of a thing. And that's what these priests and all these guys think they're doing to people. But you know, we can't do that. Do we ever have any bitterness towards somebody? You want to go there and go curse, 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 curse on their lives. Because you're selfish and you're fleshy and you're angry and bitter. No, we can't do that. And God didn't do it for that purpose. I'm sure not. God's not a... But he also says, his ways are not our ways are not his, and our thoughts are not his. I don't know. How's that for an answer? I have no idea why he would do that. But it sure brought up some good mini preaching stuff in there about music and the world. Because what spirit does the world have? Who's the God of this world? So, if nothing else, I'm not going to say that this is why God did it, but because it's there, we can deal with it with the music issue today, because it's there. I don't imagine that Mike Paulson of the Touche Baptist Church family, that he put this all in there so we could figure this out and then preach it about the music out in this world, because you know the world is not hearing this. And I'm not sure where you are with the music either. There's a power in that music. And you've got the Spirit of God. Haven't you ever listened to music or heard music that actually bothers you? I mean, it bothers you. And it isn't just that if you don't like the group, you know, Grateful Dead or whatever, you don't like the way they sang or the music in general, it's just that there's something wrong here. I remember way back in First Bible when this three keyboard Allen family guy came to the church and Marilyn said, I can't, this stuff just, something's wrong here. It's just bother or something fierce. And then when I got to be a big deal, I wasn't even there that night. And this was way back in the early stages. I remember my reaction to Amy Grant and Steve Green. I hadn't even heard their music yet. But you just know something's wrong here. And we can become so seared, even today still, we can still become so either seared or ecumenicalized to the point we don't even recognize something that's wrong anymore. And we ought to, because if nothing else, it's not here, it ought to, because something's not right in here. And you just know that. Now, how do you tell somebody, I just know this isn't right? You start to sound like them, being led of God. Well, you know what? There is leadership from the Spirit of God in us. And he will tell you. It isn't that he's telling us, but he's in there. And he doesn't want to be there right then. Isn't that what happened with Saul? I mean, he would leave. All these other examples is there's something going on, I can't be here, and the Holy Spirit of God will leave. And he can't leave with us. And so we recognize that something is wrong because there's something in us trying to get out in a way. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like the Holy Spirit. If I could leave, I would leave right now. Let me out, let me out. And I got to stay. It's just like Paul says, it's best that I stay. And the Spirit of God says, I'm sealed. I can't get out. And so God still works in us that way. But you close your Bible and don't get into that thing and don't have an idea what God is preaching. After a while, I think we just become desensitized to the Spirit of God. Because he's still going to work at us through that Bible. He's not going to just play the spiritual Acts chapter 2 or the pre-1 Corinthians 13:10 game. He's not going to do that. But he's going to get you through the book. And that's why music bothers me so much. Because we also know the musical end of it and the power that's going on. We also know the destruction that it's doing to our children. We see those things. Some of us even see the actual musical structure that your kids are sort of kind of learning. They may not be learning the mentality of it, but I hope that they listen to enough of it that they'll know what's clean. Why should you play these guys some music? Because they need to hear what good music is and they need to grow up with that stuff. So when something does come along that's musically wrong, they still can identify with that. Our kids spend all their lives listening to rock music and the store music and all this kind of junk. They're going to become just so desensitized to it that it doesn't bother them that it's going on in the church. Bothers me greatly. I cannot stand that stuff. So I don't know how we got onto that thing. Well, and because of the spirit, the evil spirit and everything, yeah. Okay, so we're looking at just more examples of Saul. We're at chapter 18, verse, do we do 21? Let's see what 21 says here. 18, 21. Oh, here's, yeah, about this wife situation for David. And Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him. There's a good reason to hook him up. That's not the kind of dating service you want. Look at verse 25. And Saul said, thus shall you say to David, the king desires not any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Now, this to me is just like, this shows you that the Bible's got everything in there. Yeah, it is. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of his whole setup was to get David to crumble there. And it didn't work. I mean, he did what he had to do. He got his wife. What a thing. What a story. God, do you realize us humans down here, this stuff is really hard. It's really wild. And you know what? This also does remind me that the Arab situation, the way they are over there, the whole Mideast thing, they do this in a heartbeat to people. Wouldn't bother them at all to torture and punish and have commands like this. Crazy. Look at verse chapter 19, verse 10. There he is again with his little javelin. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin. Boy, the guy with his little javelin right here. I've got verse 15 as well here. Let's see what's in 15. And yeah. Saul sent the messengers again to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may slay him. What a thing to tell your staff. Bill, you and Louie, would you go down and get Jimmy because I want to kill the guy. And these guys go get you. You know, they understand that you're a comp. I don't know. This is weird stuff. Then they got just marvelous stories to read. And when the messengers were come in, behold, there was an image in the bed with a pillow of goat's hair for his bolster. And Saul said, these are marvelous stories to read. And these stories wouldn't be near as exciting if they were written by Hans Christian Andersen. Right? But they're not. These are true stories. You can sit down with your kids, and if you do any kind of preparation, which I didn't, and I wish I had, you can read ahead, and you can know where to start a story and where to stop a story. You could, just a few minutes of study, find out if that story is somewhere else also. And you can sit down with your kids and they don't need to read some of these, you know, Harry Potter scary books. They can read the Bible and tell them what went on in those days with God. And these are true stories. But there's no pictures, there's no special effects unless you're a good reader. You know. Okay. Look at chapter 19. We're in 19. Look at chapter 19, verse 4. Again, we'll go back to 4. What a liar. And Jonathan spake good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he hath not sinned against thee, and because his works have been to thee were very good. For he did put his life in his hand and slew the Philistine, and the Lord brought a great salvation for all Israel. Thou sawest it, and didst rejoice. Wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? I mean, the kid's putting it to dad, you know. And Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, As the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain. You liar. You know, I mean, he wasn't, but he sure wanted him to. And then it's quick to go to chapter 20. A couple little short things in here. Verse 18. Tomorrow is a new moon, Jonathan said to David. Tomorrow is a new moon, and thou shalt be missed, because thy seat will be empty. And when thou hast stayed 3 days, then thou shalt go down quickly and come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when the business was in hand, and shalt remain by the stone Ezel. And I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark. I shot an arrow into the air, and where it fell, or something, I do not care, whatever, some deal like that. There's always Bible in these things. But anyway, and behold, I will send a lad, saying, Go find out the arrows. If I express the saying to the lad, Behold, the arrows are on this side, take them and come thou, for there is peace to thee, and no hurt as the Lord liveth. But if I say thus unto the young man, Behold, the arrows are beyond thee, well, they could have done more of the cell phone in those days, couldn't they? But shooting an arrow is a lot more fun to send a message than these little cell phone things here. And as touching the matter, which thou and I have spoken of, behold, the Lord be between thee and me forever. Then you go down to verse 35. Well, there's that possibility, and there's the wind. You got to adjust for the wind. I can see it now. Let's see here. You know, boom, and the string breaks. Now what's he going to do? How far can you throw an arrow? You know. Oh. Anyway, look at verse 35. And he goes through the story of the chapter, then it goes back on track again, kind of like me a little bit here. And it came to pass in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field at the time appointed with David, and a little lad with him. And he said unto his lad, Run, find out now the arrows which I shoot. And as the lad ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. Now there's already breaking the rule. You never run in front of the shooting line, and you never shoot when somebody's in front of the shooting line. Must have been a good arrowist. And when the lad was come to the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan cried after the lad and said, Is not the arrow beyond thee? Hint, hint. And Jonathan cried after the lad, Make speed, haste, stay not. And Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came to his master, but the lad knew not anything. See, this is what's nice, young lads. You know, you just do what you're told. Don't worry about why or anything like that. If you just, wouldn't life be cool, dads? If they just, okay, Dad. What do the little kids ask when they're just, they're probably about Zach's age, maybe? I don't know. Well, I kind of forgot those days. Why? And they didn't give this great answer. Why? And they just keep going to this thing. No, lad, just go pick up the arrows like you're told. And the lad knew nothing. Knew not anything. Only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his artillery. I like that, too, his artillery. Guy must have been in the Humvee, you know, and had all that stuff out there. That's amazing. 1611, what artillery? What do we have for artillery? And so his lad said to him, Go carry them to the city. And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of a place. And the stories, just neat stories in here, just great stories. Let's finish up with verse 27, though. Chapter 20, verse 27. Chapter 20, verse 27. Yep. Well, family. Let's read about a family squabble here. Not that anybody had never seen one before. And it came to pass on the morrow. I like that too. And it came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, the David's place was empty. Okay? And Saul said unto Jonathan his son, wherefore comest not the son of Jesse to meet, neither yesterday nor today? And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, I pray thee, for a family hath a sacrifice in the city. And my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. And now if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table. Uh-oh. There's another bad illustration why some folks aren't here today. Or how we can justify this stuff. You know, kind of a thing. Well, whatever. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, thou son of the perverse, rebellious woman. Pardon me while I smile. I know what that is. Isn't that amazing? And you know the New Bibles changed that. They put that right in there. Just you, you know. But kids, don't ever try the King James way either. Don't. Don't go there. Do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion and unto the confusion of thy mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom. Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. Now what did he just tell Jonathan a while ago? What are you going to kill him? And Jonathan answered Saul his father, and said unto him, wherefore shall he be slain? What has he done? You know, this makes me think, I'm not bugging anybody here, but try not to. Mom, why do I have to go home for school now? This is for Clarence out there. I remember when we said to Beck, we're going to stay home for school. And the tears flowed. The teachers are horrible. The two students are terrible. Da, 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 da. And it's just hard. And here's what we've got, the same thing going on here. When you try to straighten something out for your kids or for your family or for yourself, a lot of people don't understand. They really don't understand. That can be done in an improper manner here. Anyway, wherefore shall he be? What has he done? What had David done? Nothing. So in this case, Saul was the one wrong, obviously. And Saul cast the javelin. There it is again. All Saul knows how to do is to throw this javelin at people. If he doesn't, they don't agree. Let's see. Something to do with a forked tongue or something, and you throw barbs at people, and you don't know what to do, so you just insult them, kind of call them a name. That's your, so we spit javelins. There we go. We spit javelins. Remember that. And Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. He knew that. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger. And kids, don't do that. Sam, just one time, just try it. Boom. Slam your hand down, say, Dad, I'm tired of this. And see how long it lasts. So we can't see that. We need to be careful of this stuff, for example. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger, did eat no meat the second day of the month. For he was grieved for David, because his father had done him shame. A little family squabble there. We see examples in the Old Testament that actually cannot be used today. Just the opposite. Because we have the Lord. And we have to remember that. But they are fascinating stories. To me, they're just fascinating stories to read. So anyway, there you are for this morning. There's Samuel. There's Saul today.